covering the Blazers. Yeah, yeah. Ducks, Beavers, and more for the Oregonian. So I vowed for the duration of the pandemic to open each segment the same way. So here we go. Now into 2022. How's Team Fentress?
Team Fentress is good, although there's a COVID outbreak at my kid's high school. Other than that, we're doing all right.
Oh, fun. And by the way, couldn't see that coming with way things have been trending. Jeez.
Yeah, I know.
All right, let's start with one of those Twitter conversations. So somebody...
Is that what you do before I come on? You go through my Twitter. What debate or nonsense has Fentress gotten into? Ah, let's talk about that.
Oh, and by the way, like, I avoid the nonsensical conversations myself, right?
I know.
So somebody asked, bigger diva, Terrell Owens, Antonio Brown, and I got caught up in the... You know, while certainly there are diva tendencies, that Owens was a durable production machine and AB undressing and running off the field was next level. But you actually made an interesting point. So from your chair, it's like, it's kind of two different topics.
Yeah, I think a lot of people wonder if something else is going on with Anthony Brown, because the things he does are really self-destructive. And most of the diva receivers, usually the things they did enhanced their visibility, maybe their popularity in some circles. They always continue to perform well and get contracts and make money, whereas Brown, I believe, has probably cost himself $50 million. He had $30 million guaranteed from the Raiders, right?
Wow.
Had he played that out, right, and then gotten another contract, it probably would have been another 20. And instead, in the last however many years, it's been 3 years, he maybe is going to make, what, $5 or $6 million? I'm not sure exactly what it is. So he's cost himself $40-50 million by doing some bizarre things that no one can really explain or understand. So for me, I just feel like he's just really self-destructive. Not that he isn't a diva, but Terrell Owens was a diva in a way where he didn't really destroy his career. He may have destroyed his image for some people, which is one of the reasons why he wasn't the first ballot Hall of Famer. But, and he also did antics that were more, like, a lot of them were funny or interesting. You know, most good divas, they do things that are entertaining. What has Antonio Brown really done that you can look back on and say, that was entertainment? I'm asking, like, seriously. Like, I can't remember. Whereas Ocho Cinco... Well, one, he changed his name to Ocho Cinco. Two, he would do the funky dances, right? And he would, he wore the Hall of Fame jacket after a touchdown. Like, he was always doing something zany. Owens with the pulling out the Sharpie with the cell phone. I think he was the first to do the cell phone, right?
Well, wasn't that Joe Horn?
I thought Owens did. I think you're right. Joe Horn did. I thought for some reason Owens did. Maybe he did something else. But anyway, he did the Sharpie. He went to the midfield at Dallas. I mean, he did the popcorn thing. We took the popcorn. He danced with the cheerleader, like,
yeah, the pom poms,
Right. He was sitting out with Philly and then doing sit ups in his driveway. You know, he had famous lines like "I love me some me." Like, there's a lot of things there that just made you laugh if you were being lighthearted about it. And even Moss had an edge to him, but was straight cash homie. Doing the bump with the goalpost at Green Bay and doing the fake moon thing, which I thought was absolutely one of the greatest things in the history of football, given how tumultuous that, Packer fans were cussing him out before the game. He scored two touchdowns in that. That was a playoff game, too, I think. And he does the bump and what's his face? The announcer, Joe Buck, goes crazy about it. Joe Buck. Wait, I was getting the Bucks mixed up.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, that's the most disgusting things I've ever. I'm like, it's not like he really pulled his pants down. Come on, dude. but anyway, like, there's stories we can tell. Whereas Brown, it's like, it's all these stories are just self-destructive. And it's, I kind of, like, I feel for the guy. I hope he's going to be okay. I kind of feel like, things can be badly. Now, obviously, this thing with Tampa Bay has reached a different level because he's claiming one story. They're kind of claiming another. Who knows where that's going to go. But, yeah, for me, Owens is just he's next-level diva for me, whereas I think Brown is more trouble.
No, one of the ESPN guys put your point perfectly, said self-promotion versus self-destruction.
Destruction, and I was there, like, you go.
Spot on. So right. We continue with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. So we hadn't even talked since before Christmas, before Oregon's bowl game against Oklahoma. So while I was surprised that Utah Part 2 ended up being a bad sequel, I know you and Joey and the guys on Talking Ducks broke it down. So I wanted to just check in. What was your thought heading into the Alamo Bowl? Do you think Oregon, with all those opt-outs and transfers and coaching turmoil, had a shot? I mean, what did you think before?
I thought that they were going to get rolled and that the 4.5-point spread initially was a joke. So I may or may not have put a little bit of money on it. I thought that, you know, that both teams had a lot of guys missing, right, obviously. And Oklahoma had three of their best defensive players out, and I think that showed in how Oregon just steamrolled them with the run game. My God, the holes. I mean, Trey, we can all praise Dye for his game. He had a good game. But, man, he was running through some massive holes. O-line really came to play. But, no, I figured, you know, I mean, my main take was, okay, you got two teams missing a lot of players. But I felt like the Ducks were missing more players. They were going to be really young at receiver. And at the end of the day, I'm going to go with the more dynamic quarterback, which was Caleb Williams. But Anthony Brown, man, and those receivers in the second half, wow. And that, I joked about this on Talking Ducks this week. I was like, that was almost like a big, giant, like, a post-tease. Like, at the end of the season, when we're down in the final game of the year in the last two quarters, now we're going to unleash the downfield passing game. Now we're going to connect on all these bombs and deep plays to all these young pass receivers. That had to be torturous probably for some fans. But, no, I kind of figured Oregon was going to lose. The only thing I'll say, and some people have pushed back on me already about this, but I think there's a lot of concerns about the defense. Granted, they were missing a lot of people, and people say, well, they had the opt-outs and the injuries. I get it, but all the opt-outs, they're not going to be there next year either. So whatever you think the opt-outs had in terms of impact on the game, well, that's going to be in play for next year as well. So, you know, they finished 79th in total defense, 75th in scoring defense in the country. So there's a lot of big holes to fill. McKinley's gone, obviously Kayvon, Wright. I mean, wow, those are three legitimate NFL guys who are gone. But they recruited, you know, well in terms of star numbers. We know that. So they just need a lot of guys to step up and rise to the occasion. So we'll see what happens with the defense. But, yeah, I figured they would lose, and they did.
Man, that second half, it was almost like September, no vertical game. October, can't stretch the field. November, no deep throws. December, psych!
Exactly.
But one thing I'll tell you, you know, the new coach, and I know those early press conferences are easy, and he'll get evaluated what happens on the field. But, man, this is a landing dude. He's only 35. I love the Georgia defense is just all out of tack. The hirings he's made, the way he was able to keep some of the guys like Seven McGee. I mean, fair to say that this young guy is kind of a dynamo, and, yeah, it's now, but kind of a good reason for this fan base to be pretty stoked.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I did not hold back in the I told you so's about Mario in Miami, and I still think bigger picture with this program, it's going to be interesting to see how long Lanning lasts and sort of what the overall big picture view is for this program moving forward. But after sort of spiking the ball a little bit on the Mario thing. You know, I tweeted out, and I said this on Talking Ducks, Mario was good, right? He did a good job, but he was replaceable. Like, I never thought Mario was this, you know, god that some people were making out to be. Same thing with Chip, same thing with anyone, really. And I felt like they would go out and get someone who could probably do a good job. I don't know if he's going to get them to the national championship. I still don't believe that is a strong possibility, but they went out and they got a guy who has won every day so far. He's won the day every day he's been the head coach, you know, in this early part. And fans love him. And that's what you want, right? When you go through a separation or a breakup or a divorce, you hope that you meet someone new and can have a good, long-lasting relationship, right? Well, long might be. We'll see. But anyway, the point is, fans are in love again, right? Just like when Taggart left and then everyone loved Mario, right? He's hiring some nice, you know, coaches in the recruiting realm, of course, and some who have been proven to be very good X's and O's guys and on the field coaches. And they went out and got a bridge quarterback who, you know, we'll see what happens with him and Ty Thompson, but that had to happen, and they've done that. I think they got, you know, not a superstar, but a good quarterback in Bo Nix. So far so good. You want to see how they close in recruiting. They don't have a ton of guys signed, and that's typical when you have a change like they did at head coach. And then we'll see what he does in the transfer portal. Like some of these holes on defense I'm talking about, they could be filling them in with guys in the portal. So far, so good. And I think Duck fans have a reason to be optimistic. Yeah, for sure.
My favorite element of the fans was talking about when Lanning is going to leave. I'm like, he's not even done at Georgia yet. He hasn't even gotten here. Oh, man. Couple final thoughts for Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. I got to get to the NBA and your Bulls. Most don't realize that outside the Jordan era, Chicago's never made another league final and just won East final. So you look at, they added DeRozan, Caruso, first full season with Vucevic. I kind of like that rookie from Illinois, DeSumo. DeSumo, I always get his name screwed up. But how you feeling about this group? And I know we're halfway through this season.
I know. Like, I don't know if you've noticed, but I haven't talked a ton about them on Twitter.
That's why I asked.
And it's like, I don't want to jinx it. I remember in the summer some people hammering the DeRozan thing, like, oh, they overpaid for him, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, he's a 32-year-old former All-Star. He's coming off a really good season. That's the going rate. Oh, it's too much. He doesn't shoot the three. He doesn't play D, blah, 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 blah. And, like, I mean, I'm not one to shy away from I told you so's, and I got a list. I got a list I want to double back on, but I, at the same time, like, I just don't want to jinx anything. Like, it's everything is going nicely. They've got the best record in the East, you know, and they're so much fun to watch. Like, the way they play, how everyone has gelled together so easily, so effortlessly. It's just amazing, and it's hard for me to always say or ever say the Bulls fans have suffered. I mean, there's been some bad luck with Rose, et cetera, but when your team wins 6 championships in 8 years, you kind of exhausted your championships, I think, for your lifetime almost, right? When you do the math, it's like, I'm ahead. If an NBA team, if average is 1 every 30 years, and my Bulls have won 6, that means they're, to reach average, they'd have to not win, or they'd have to only win those 6 in 180 years, right? So I really don't have much room to complain, and so I try not to complain too much, but I'm extremely excited where they are right now and what they have going. And with the way DeRozan and LaVine are as closers, that's the thing. Like, you have two big-time closers who can get any shot they want at any time, and that is what's so huge late in games in the playoffs. And they're good. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to stop right there because I don't want to ruin anything by jinxing them. And we all know some fans can be very superstitious, and I am one of them.
Oh, me too. But, man, dude hit back-to-back buzzer beaters, and they weren't layups in the lane. They were tough shots.
Yeah, he's big-time clutch. And here's the thing I love too, dude. I totally get the three and the math of the three, and you can't argue against it because, look what Golden State did, right? But the idea that the very good mid-range guy is now passe, you know, it's so 80s, 90s, I think it's garbage because not many teams can live off the three like they try to. Yes, if you have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson who are shooting over 40, then yeah, you probably can. But most teams don't have two or three guys like that who can shoot over 40 with ice water in their veins in the clutch. A lot of people can do it in the regular season, right? But when you're in a playoff series, can you do it with 2 minutes to go in a close game? There's only a handful who you can really rely on. You need to have guys who can hit those mid-range shots. If you're down 2, you got someone who's going to shoot 65% on the mid-range shot. That's who you're going to. And that's an exaggeration on percentage. But you get my point. So I love the fact that he's bringing back the idea that you can be mostly a mid-range guy and dominate.
I think you look at Lillard, Curry, and Trae Young. They have ruined it for guys who could hit maybe 30. They think they could pull up from 33 feet and hit these shots because they did it in their backyard 5 years ago after watching these guys hit. It's just
exactly. I covered the Atlanta Blazers game the other day, and Trae Young was just phenomenal. And you know, it's always funny when the home crowd is watching a star do things, and their reaction is, oh, like I said, it's this awe sound that fills the arena. And I remember with Kobe, I remember with LeBron, I remember back in the day with Jordan, where like you're not necessarily cheering it because it's the other guy, but there's still this sense of, oh my God, I can't believe that. And Trae Young had several of those the other night with some of the threes he hit.
I would call it home fan longing.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I wish you were ours.
Oh, man. All right, folks, he's Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Wishing you and yours a most delightful, healthy, happy, and safe 2022. Enjoy Friday, the weekend, and Mr. Fentress, we'll catch up next week.
Sounds great, buddy. Bye.
Take it easy.